Streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. During a high surf warning in the Santa Cruz, California area, two people are rescued after a portion of the wharf falls into the ocean. Mayor Fred Keeley says no one was seriously injured.
These are massive piers which weigh hundreds and hundreds of pounds apiece and are being driven by the Pacific Ocean. That is not something that we think folks ought to mess around with. We encourage people to stay out of the water until further notice.
Almost 18 miles south of Santa Cruz, a man has died after a large wave trapped him underneath debris on a beach. Just days before Christmas, tragedy in Greensboro, North Carolina, as relatives and fellow officers mourn the loss of Officer Michael Horan. He was killed in the line of duty today as he responded to a call about a person with a gun inside a Food Lion supermarket. Greensboro Assistant Police Chief M.J. Harris.
A shooting occurred inside of the store at approximately 11 a.m. fatally wounding Officer Horan. The circumstances of what led to the shooting are currently being investigated.
The alleged killer of United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson pleads not guilty in New York to state charges, including first-degree murder as an act of terrorism. More on Luigi Mangione from CBS's Lilia Luciano.
He's simultaneously facing federal charges that could carry the death penalty if convicted. Mangione's defense attorney, Karen Friedman Agnifilo, accused Mayor Eric Adams of politicizing the 26-year-old's arrest after a dramatic perp walk with heavily armed officers last week.
Meteorologist Craig Allen says a weather system could affect travel between Christmas Eve and Christmas Day on the East Coast.
There will be a mix of rain, sleet, freezing rain, and some snow up and down 95 from Washington through Philadelphia and Baltimore. It includes the New York City area. There could be a touch of snow for Christmas Eve morning on Tuesday for the New York City area.
Former Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz fails to stop the release of the House Ethics Committee report on him. And CBS's Scott McFarland with some of what's in it.
The U.S. House Ethics Committee, which first launched an investigation of Gaetz 3 years ago, has issued a 42-page report of its findings, alleging they found evidence Gaetz paid a 17-year-old girl who just completed her junior year in high school $400 for sex in 2017 and made payments of more than $90,000 to 12 different women, likely for sexual activity and drug use.
Gaetz has denied any wrongdoing. Former President Bill Clinton is admitted to Georgetown University Medical Center for tests and observation after coming down with a fever. His spokesperson says he's in good spirits. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
The Badgers win at home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College basketball, Wisconsin with a 76-53 victory over the Detroit Mercy Titans at the Kohl Center. A good performance from Stephen Crowell and Nolan Winter, who had a double-double. Head coach Greg Gard.
I thought the two bigs, Crowell and Winter, were good, were efficient. Obviously, the numbers bear that out. Defensively, did a lot of good things to keep the ball out of the paint.
NBA, the Bucks in Chicago tonight against the Bulls. NFL, Saints head coach Darren Rizzi says, although Alvin Kamara is out for tonight's game, he'll rely on his other running backs, including former Packer Jamal Williams.
You know, Kendra could kind of pick up where he's left off the last couple of weeks. Jamal Williams has had many, many games in that division, in that stadium, and he's had some really good ones. Obviously played for them and played within the division with Detroit.
Kickoff tonight at Lambeau Field, 7:15. The Saints are 5-9, but Matt LaFleur says he's not taking them lightly.
This is the National Football League. You better get yourself ready to go, otherwise you're going to get your ass kicked.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. In trying to make Christmas sexy news, Kim Kardashian has put out a new music video. The reality TV personality released a video under her brother-in-law Travis Barker's label. She used a breathy version of her own rendition of Santa Baby, one of the worst Christmas songs ever, and put images of herself crawling through a party in a blonde wig and skin-colored jeggings. I'm not sure if she realizes it either, but her cleavage was totally showing. I'm sure she's going to give that editor an earful. In the video, there's a donkey, Mary and Joseph, people fighting, people raking money, money, and a bonfire while people play Twister. For what seems like an eternity, Kim crawls through the chaos with her own singing as a backdrop until she finally stops between Santa's legs and looks up to find it's really Macaulay Culkin. The only good thing about the video is that her singing mercifully stops along with the music about midway through, so it's just her crawling with weird images. It's just something you have to see for yourself, folks. You can check it out free on YouTube, but you'll still want your money back. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy sky tonight, low pretty close to 20. Tomorrow, more clouds hanging around, highs upper 20s. Cloudy Christmas Day, high low 30s. A cloudy sky for Thursday, a high in the upper 30s. Rain possible Friday and Saturday as highs nudge to near 40. Right now it's 31.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time as Mr. Zomers and I sit down to bring you a special Christmas holiday show and happy Hanukkah as well. Lots of Christmas music and reflections on the season. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
In my eyes are Valentine's.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel. I am sitting in as a guest host today for Maggie, who is away briefly from her wonderful communications or engagements with you on the major issues of our time. Pursuant to that commission, doing just the same as Maggie normally would do this afternoon in this, the second hour of our broadcast, Monday, December 23rd. I am joined here in the broadcast studios of Civic Media by my fantastic producer. His name is Cardi, and together we're also taking your questions, your inquiries, your comments, your observations about anything on our ambitious but achievable agenda. That phone number is 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. You can also text us. You can drop a comment into the feed, and we'll be a part of the conversation with you. Thank you for joining me in this, the second hour of our Monday broadcast. Lots of things going on in America. Lots of things going on around the world. Lots of things going on here in the state of Wisconsin and beyond. We spent most of the first hour talking about the part of the legacy, a small portion of the legacy of the Biden administration, including the area of the environment and the things that he has articulated just recently, the commissions he has given to all of us to reach some important climate control goals by 2035, things that will long be beyond his term, and are part of any appropriate commission to ensure that our air, our water, our lands are safe and secure for future generations. Also talked about that big environmental victory in the Montana by some youth who affirmed through the Supreme Court there that in the United States of America generally, and certainly in Montana, a constitutional right there under the Montana Constitution to have public policy include considerations of climate issues and green gas issues in particular, a major issue there coming out of Montana, affirming what can be done and what should be done in the area of the environment. Also today, the president commuting the sentences of 37 death row inmates in federal prison, as he has done before previously, great numbers of commutations of sentences previously granted, extended by this president, focusing again on the issue of the death penalty and living up to one of his promises to America when he was elected to the presidency to bring the death penalty, at least in terms of its practical administration, to an end. He has established through the Attorney General a moratorium on that that continues to this day as a part of his policy just today, commuting the sentences of 37 federal defendants on death row. They are not going to be released. They're not going to be shown the public door, if you will. But their death sentences imposed by federal courts, commuted, brought down to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. They will never be freed, but they will not be executed either. That's what Joe Biden did just today as a part of that. And again, we're talking a lot today in that first hour and in this second hour as well about the tales of two administrations, the different kinds of things that you can anticipate will happen under a Trump administration as opposed to things happening that have happened that will continue to happen for the next 28 days in a Joe Biden administration. We know that a lot of that has been predicted by the incoming president, our president-elect. His name is Donald Trump, not only during the campaign, but in various documents, which he has variously embraced and tried to distance himself from, articulating various views about a great majority of things, including the environment, including the death penalty, in which he has said, for example, that he will encourage the production of oils and coal sources of energy. In addition, that he will ramp up executions in America in the area of the environment and in the area of death penalty and law enforcement generally. Some very significant differences between a Joe Biden presidency and a Donald Trump presidency. Donald Trump is also, of course, as he not only should be doing as a future president, but will be doing as our president, should be articulating for all of us so we understand clearly what he is about, who he means to be in the areas of all of this, including things like immigration issues and, yes, transgender issues and international issues as well. And so he continues to do that as late as just yesterday, Sunday, President-elect Donald Trump delivering what can only be called a sprawling address, major address, all sorts of issues, with due respect to the incoming president, in many ways rambling from one topic to another, fairly wildly as he does during the course of many speeches, and certainly on the campaign trial. He said, I'm providing you with a small preview of the common sense revolution. The common sense revolution, he said, that we are about to experience in 28 days from now, when on January 20th at noontime, he raises his right hand on the west portico of the Capitol building and takes the oath of office from the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. We're going to get, according to what he said just yesterday, a common sense revolution in America. His administration will bring, among other things, a shutdown of the nation's borders. We've heard a lot about that. We'll talk more about that in just a moment or so. He's going to end federal regulation as we know it. Those federal regulations that, again, keep us safe and secure in many, many ways in the areas of certainly environment, but also food and health and education and, yes, climate and all sorts of other things, labor, products, all kinds of things. He's going to bring that, he said, if not to a conclusion, certainly limit dramatically the regulation imposed to the good of Americans in our nation. He's going to lower taxes as he did before, bringing tax relief to some portion of the population. He said he's going to prosecute his rivals. He's going to prosecute those people who have opposed him in the past. And he also said he's going to stop woke, whatever that may mean, stop woke. That's an exact quote. He's going to end the transgender lunacy also. He also spent some time talking about, yes, that's right, Panama and Teddy Roosevelt and Jimmy Carter. And in this 90-minute speech, he gave it at a conservative conference. He was in Phoenix, Arizona. He offered a very, very triumphant view of his election victory, described his adversaries as befuddled, said they were wrong, promised that a new, as he said, golden age in America is about to begin. He said, we will end the occupation. The occupation, whatever that means. And January 20th will truly be a liberation day, he said, in America. He told thousands of people gathered there in Phoenix just yesterday. Something called America Fest. It's a 4-day conference. It's run by a conservative group called Turning Point USA. The president's speech, again, the incoming president's speech, was this usual mashup, if you will, this combination, many, many things. It includes things that can only be described objectively, not subjectively, objectively, as false assertions about various things, false statements about the way the world works, the way that it is today. There's a good deal of self-praise about what he had done in his first administration, an awful lot of aspiration about what he will do in the second administration. fierce attacks on his adversaries, these people that he, in fact, is going to go after. He's going to promise to prosecute, to investigate and prosecute his rivals. And all he's going to do, of course, all of this as he returns to power, changing the country for the better. And once again, my wonderful producer, Cardi, has got some tape from that speech that Donald Trump delivered just yesterday, that America Fest address to all of us, including the thousands of people there in Phoenix.
First day back in the Oval Office, I will sign a historic slate of executive orders to close our border to illegal aliens and stop the invasion of our country. And on that same day, we will begin the largest deportation operation in American history, larger even than that of President Dwight D. Eisenhower. And as part of Operation Aurora, you know all about Aurora, how horrible that's been. Every single foreign gang and illegal alien member, all of this criminal network operating on American soil will be dismantled, deported, and destroyed. Going to get them out.
That is the president-elect in Phoenix just yesterday talking about immigration, his plans to deport thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. He's talked about doing it on day one, which, of course, is a practical impossibility to do that sort of thing. Note along the way, immigration, of course, a federal issue, should not be a state issue, although plainly it does impact states dramatically. That's one of the reasons why, for example, the governor of Texas, other governors along the southwest border have been sparring with the federal government, including the Department of Homeland Security when it comes to border issues, all those kinds of things. It is still under the Constitution a federal issue, and that's why any president, including the present president, Joe Biden, the future president, Donald Trump, they've got the capacity to do these kinds of things. You've got the capacity to do it through the Department of Homeland Security, Border Security, of course, Border Patrol, all of those federal agencies, federal officers, to address what is admittedly, undeniably, no one disagrees with the fact that there is a dramatic immigration problem in the United States of America. The Congress has tried to wrestle with this for many years. I recall at the end of my term as the United States Attorney, as we, responsible for enforcing both civilly and criminally the immigration laws here in Wisconsin, throughout the nation, as do other U.S. attorneys around the country, being told that we've got an agreement between Republicans and Democrats about what could indeed happen at that time. That never happened. We know at the end of this present administration, just weeks ago, just prior to the election, there was another deal between Republicans and Democrats that began, not completely, not perfectly, to address the immigration issues that we know exist. It is a system that is antiquated. It has not been brought up to speed in decades. It is a system that is too slow. In many ways, it is unfair. It is inequitable. All the kinds of things that Republicans and Democrats complain about in a unified voice about our immigration system are true. And we have the mechanisms. We've had the mechanisms to begin to address those. Donald Trump plainly stopped that legislation from going forward for his own political purposes so that he can say, for example, yesterday that now he will be the one to accomplish this. But still needs legislation to accomplish much of this. The president's authority, notwithstanding what the Supreme Court did in July of this year, still is restricted, still is limited by a legislative body. That's the Congress, the House of Representatives, the Senate, as altogether those branches of government, and yes, indeed, the courts work on this issue called immigration. When we come back, we're going to talk more about what Donald Trump said yesterday about his future America. Yesterday, Sunday in Phoenix, addressing this group at Turning Point USA, as he talked about the America under a Donald Trump presidency, here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Love surround us, laughing and filled with cheer. My heart told me once before to find my dream and search no more.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Millions of Americans take medicine like Ozempic and Zepbound. Many of them are overpaying by thousands of dollars a year. These GLP-1 medications for diabetes, weight loss, and more may not always be covered by your insurance, but GoodRx can help.
GoodRx helps you save every month on prescriptions at over 70,000 pharmacies nationwide. Best of all, it's free to use. Check GoodRx to save on GLP-1s. Just go to GoodRx.com/GLP. That's GoodRx.com/GLP. GoodRx is not insurance, but can be used instead of insurance, including Medicare and other federal and state-funded programs.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. On my YouTube channel, I recently talked to Amanda Clayman, a financial therapist and an all-around excellent person. We talked about how to reduce money anxiety, and her advice was really helpful. She said, unless we have a time to do money, we don't have a time to not do money. Meaning, if we set aside some time to think about and manage our money, it lets our brain stop worrying about money all the time. For example, I have a monthly money meeting with myself, which lowers my money anxiety and helps keep me on top of my finances. If you don't already, set and keep that money meeting with yourself. It'll help your wallet and your peace of mind. Remember what Amanda said, unless you have a time to do money, you don't have a time to not do money. For more everyday money tips, check out workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in guest hosting for Maggie today in this, the second hour of our broadcast, along with my fantastic producer, Cardi. We're taking your phone calls also at 855-752-4842. Your comments on the line. Text us, be a part of our discussion as we talk about this major speech given just yesterday by our incoming president. His name is Donald Trump. He's going to be the president in 28 days from now. He was speaking to a group called America Fest in Phoenix, talking an awful lot about immigration and how on the same day, the first day, he's going to close our border, largest deportation operation in American history. Kind of light on details, as always. Didn't say exactly who would be deported or when, how that would happen. But he promised along the way to designate Mexican drug cartels as terror organizations. And he said that every cartel operating on American soil will be dismantled, deported, and destroyed. Now, the law enforcement interest, yes, in addressing crime is significant. That is important. And all administrations are going after an attempt to reduce and eliminate the impact of Mexican drug cartels, any drug cartel. His, however, of course, has a certain bent to it that others do not. And that is the reason for the concern about his omnibus, very broad speaking policy when it comes to deportations of people who, from his view, need to be deported. All of that coming out of his speech once again yesterday. This is a historic slate of executive orders, he said, that he is going to issue to close borders and eliminate from our population a significant portion of the people who are residing here today, who in many ways, as we well know, support our economy, keep us alive in many ways, both economically and in terms of our own health and physical vitality. An awful lot of economic support and even social support by our immigrant populations. We'll see exactly what an immigration policy under Donald Trump looks like under his Homeland Security Department. As I said, we're also always delighted to entertain phone calls, and we've got coming in from Prairie du Sac, Mark, appreciate your call, appreciate your comment, your question, your observation here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. One thing that really caught my eye is seeing the headlines this morning is, in addition to the whole immigrant thing, and that's going to be just a, I can see a lot of horrors. I mean, I just see parallels of that, of World War II Germany, of Jews being declared non-citizens and others declared non-citizens and just deported to the death camps and the concentration camps. But the whole thing, that the misunderstanding that these people have about our treaties, I mean, the Panama Canal Treaty, you know, that's Panamanian territory now. We ceded that territory back to Panama, a nation we've more or less created because they broke away from Colombia. If I remember my history right, we supported the Panamanians in their revolution against Colombia, the nation of Colombia, and to build the canal. And it is just the ignorance on the part of probably Donald Trump. He probably doesn't understand anything about that treaty. I mean, except what he's been told. He can throw this stuff out there. I'm just going to just cancel the treaty, and that's going to be American territory again. And that is just utter nonsense.
It does, and it underscores once again, Mark, what you so articulately say, which is the concern I think that so many of it has, you included, is that putting aside the policy, which of course is number one on the list, he fundamentally doesn't understand how government works, he doesn't understand how international engagements work. These attempts to do things unilaterally, whether it's to build a wall on our southern border with Mexico and requiring somehow that Mexico pay for it, all these other things, another referenced in this speech and other times. First term, of course, he was also talking about purchasing Greenland. Remember that? And that recurs again in his speech in Phoenix just this past week. Greenland, of course, although it's a quasi-independent entity and has its own trappings of government, it's owned by Denmark. And we don't simply purchase lands. We don't simply purchase other portions of nations or other nations themselves. And again, part of this on our agenda, Mark, appreciate so much your commentary, not only about the substance, but the president during the course of his speech also talking about the Panama Canal. He called it stupid. That was his word. Stupid that the United States agreed in the 1970s. This was Jimmy Carter to return to the canal to Panamanian control after a period of joint control. He accused Panama during the course of this speech he gave just yesterday of charging fees to United States shippers that were, in his words, ridiculous. He called them highly unfair. And he vowed that he would end that under his administration. He talked about Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter, one of the most decent, if not the most decent person ever to occupy the presidency. Jimmy Carter, still with us today in the wake of his admittedly one term as president between 1977 and 1981, accomplished an awful lot. And certainly in his post-presidency, one of the most important leaders in America and around the nation for what he is and has done to this day. We owe an awful lot to Jimmy Carter. Criticized Jimmy Carter for doing this. He did sell basically the Panama Canal back to the Panamanians for $1. That, of course, is just the contract provision that accomplished that. But criticized him for doing that when, in fact, that promotes the international economic stability that Jimmy Carter and others at that time and to this day want to endorse. We, of course, when we hear about these things, including the Panamanian leadership, they respond in abject horror and disbelief and describe the fact once again that Donald Trump does not understand history, as Mark, you just said, does not understand what the treaties are all about. And while the Panamanian leadership does not call Donald Trump stupid, it does basically indicate that this kind of proposal is ridiculous. Donald Trump went on to say this complete ripoff of our country there in Panama must immediately stop. It's going to stop, he said. He threatened that if it did not, we will demand that the Panama Canal be returned to the United States of America. Didn't say how that would happen, given that the canal was returned to Panamanian control through, as Mark, you just said accurately, a treaty. It was signed by both countries, but his comments came just hours, again, after he posted a similar harangue about Panama. And that happened, of course, on social media late Saturday night before he talked about this on Sunday. Panama and Greenland continue to occupy the focus of this incoming president. 28 days from now, he takes the oath of office. More about this speech when the Maggie Dawn Show continues here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
And may all your Christmases be well.
Christmas.
is locally grown radio, WFHR.
CBS News Brief. In California, two people are rescued after a portion of the Santa Cruz Wharf falls into the ocean during a high surf warning. Mayor Fred Keeley.
We believe that everyone who went into the water is now accounted for and safe.
18 miles south, a man was buried under debris on a beach by a high wave. While responding to a call of a person with a weapon inside a Greensboro, North Carolina supermarket, police officer Michael Horan is shot and killed. This just days before Christmas, Assistant Police Chief M.J. Harris.
Together we are mourning Officer Horan, who was a husband, a father, a son, a friend, and much more to his family.
A suspect is in custody. CBS's Lilia Luciano says of the man accused of killing UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
Shackled and handcuffed, Luigi Mangione was led into a lower Manhattan courtroom where he spoke briefly to enter a plea.
He says not guilty to first-degree murder as an act of terrorism and other state counts. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Badgers win at home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College basketball, Wisconsin with a 76-53 victory over the Detroit Mercy Titans at the Kohl Center. A good performance from Stephen Crowell and Nolan Winter, who had a double-double. Head coach Greg Gard.
I thought the two bigs, Crowell and Winter, were good, were efficient. Obviously, the numbers bear that out. Defensively, did a lot of good things to keep the ball out of the paint.
NBA, the Bucks in Chicago tonight against the Bulls. NFL, Saints head coach Darren Rizzi says, although Alvin Kamara is out for tonight's game, he'll rely on his other running backs, including former Packer Jamal Williams.
You know, Kendre could kind of pick up where he's left off the last couple of weeks. Jamal Williams has had many, many games in that division, in that stadium, and he's had some really good ones. Obviously played for them and played within the division with Detroit.
Kickoff tonight at Lambeau Field, 7:15. The Saints are 5-9, but Matt LaFleur says he's not taking them lightly.
This is the National Football League. You better get yourself ready to go, otherwise you're going to get your ass kicked.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Hi, everybody. This is Mike Comer, sports broadcaster on WIRI. I'd just like to wish a very Merry Christmas from my family to you and yours.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Sequels led the way at last weekend's domestic box office. Sonic the Hedgehog 3 led the way with $62 million and was followed up by Mufasa, the Lion King prequel, which finished with a disappointing $35 million at the U.S. box office, despite playing on 400 more screens than Sonic. Despite grabbing second place in the U.S., Mufasa was number one globally with a take of $122 million. Finishing in third place was the juggernaut Wicked, which pulled in $13.5 million at the box office, putting its grand total domestically at about $400 million. Wicked leapfrogged Moana 2, which finished in fourth place with $13.1 million at the box office. The borderline religious film Homestead finished in fifth place with $6.6 million despite not so great reviews. The Brutalist, a 3.5-hour film that actually has an intermission, opened in limited release and pulled in $266,000, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it was only on four screens. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy sky tonight, low pretty close to 20. Tomorrow, more clouds hanging around, highs upper 20s. Cloudy Christmas Day, high low 30s. A cloudy sky for Thursday, a high in the upper 30s. Rain possible Friday and Saturday as highs nudge to near 40. Current temp is 30.
The Jell-O program starring Jack Benny.
The Johnson Wax program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Fast Music Hall with Bing Crosby and his distinguished guests for this Christmas Eve.
Be our guests for the WFHR tradition of 30 hours of Christmas. Starting at noon on Christmas Eve, enjoy 30 hours of old-time radio, classic Christmas music, and special broadcasts of the Sunshine Polka Show, Seth Faces the Music, and Director's Cut. Exclusively on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM, it's a Merry Christmas from all of us at WFHR, locally grown radio.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
Tuesday morning, Sherita Booker poses this question. Would you eat a cannibal sandwich as part of the garnish on a Bloody Mary?
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning starting at 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel, your host for these remaining segments of this hour on the broadcast. As always, taking your phone calls at 855-752-4842. Your texts, any comments, questions about our subject matter, talking about the incoming president's seeming fascination all of a sudden with Panama, both in his social media feeds of Saturday and again talking about that on Sunday as he addresses this group in Phoenix, Arizona. Cardi once again has a bit of recording of the president talking about what needs to happen, apparently, in the future, taking back the Panama Canal.
Of Panama during the construction period. Think of that. We lost 38,000 men. Teddy Roosevelt was president of the United States at the time of its building and understood the strength of naval power and trade. When President Jimmy Carter foolishly gave it away for $1. During his term in office, it was solely for Panama to manage and not for China or any other country to manage. You see what's going on there? China. It was likewise not given for Panama to charge the United States, its Navy, and its corporations doing business within our country exorbitant prices and rates of passage, which they do. They charge us like it's a disgrace. Our Navy and commerce have been treated in a very unfair and injudicious way. The fees being charged by Panama are ridiculous, highly unfair.
That is the incoming president of the United States of America, Donald Trump, talking about Panama amidst presumably many other issues that should be on the agenda of any incoming and present president. They are on the agenda of Joe Biden and of many previous presidents, fascinated now by the history here, which, of course, he gets wrong, but also the present status of all of that, Panama. We will see if that also looms large in his inaugural address, which we will consume on January 20th, about 27, 28 days from now. The president wasn't done. The incoming president wasn't done. Many, many other issues. This broad aspect. Many things discussed by him in sort of his meandering state on Sunday, just yesterday. But also taking the opportunity to revisit a common issue of his, president-elect lashing out repeatedly at transgender people in our nation. And that, of course, regrettably, to the delight, the horror of the audience, which was roaring in approval. Donald Trump said that with a stroke of a pen, he said, when he becomes president, we are going to end the transgender lunacy. He talked about the mutilation of children, an apparent reference to gender-affirming surgery. He said, we will keep men out of women's sports. He added that it will be the policy of the United States that there are only two genders, men and women. And as if that's not enough to offend and be inconsistent with not only medical science, but also care for human beings across the category of all immutable characteristics, went on also to target diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at public institutions, private companies as well. He promised to ban those programs, he said, because, as he said, we believe in the merit system in the United States, when in fact those programs, to the extent that they are in existence as Donald Trump envisions them or believes they are in existence, promote merit and promote assurance that everyone in our nation has equal access to employment and housing and economic stability and labor and commerce and healthcare and education. He said, we are going to stop woke. He vowed to do that, referring to those initiatives with a certain profanity, which I will not repeat here on the Maggie Dawn Show. But that's our president, as he describes a segment of our population that is much in attention, plainly for him as well. Plainly also in the attention of others in America. We know that the United States Supreme Court right now has on its agenda a transgender case, one of the first times, if not the first time, that the United States Supreme Court has addressed transgender issues. It has previously said in a landmark opinion called Bostock, B-O-S-T-O-C-K, that the word sex, when it appears in Title VII, which is the legislation, this major act in the 1960s, it establishes equity and non-discrimination when it comes to the terms and conditions of employment and jobs, hiring, firing, the circumstances of the employment setting, that sex does in fact include sexual orientation and gender identity, and basically rejects the fundamental notion that our incoming president articulated again, that there are two genders, men and women, and that's it. And the Supreme Court, again, this term, taking up an issue about whether or not legislatures, state legislatures, can prohibit medical doctors and families of youth. And this is the important issue. Medical and family members of youth who are seeking transgendered care, including in things like puberty blockers and, yes, surgeries and other treatments as youth with parental consent. With parental consent, can legislatures prohibit medical health care providers who are addressing issues related to body dysphoria and identity and all those other things that are important to human beings in this country and around the world? Can legislatures prevent medical providers providing that kind of medical care, again, under medical supervision, with the advice and the counsel and direction of well-established and experienced doctors and medical staff? And yes, indeed, with the consent and concurrence of parents for their youth. That issue right now before the United States Supreme Court. Obviously, the position of the government may change in that when the Trump administration takes power here in just 28 days. Another case likely percolating up to the Supreme Court, also in the lower courts right now, is under Title IX. This whole issue of whether or not under Title IX, again, one of the great civil rights laws of our nation, whether or not transgender people have accurate and complete and access to the academic trappings that Title IX would afford all peoples. The question, of course, focusing a lot on sports in America, that issue of Title IX entitlement of transgender populations, whether or not they too can enjoy the benefits of the law as do other populations in our nation. That may percolate up to the Supreme Court in this term. And then we've got breaking news, thanks to the wonderful work of my producer, Cardi, who identified for us just now that the Texas Attorney General, his name, you know him well, he's been much in the national attention. His name is Ken Paxton. He's the Attorney General, the chief state law enforcement officer. He's not a federal official. He's a state law enforcement officer. He himself subject to some reviews by the legislature for his own conduct, his own ethical or unethical conduct in the legislature and having to do with his behavior as the attorney general. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, as the chief state law enforcement officer of that state, suing, and again, in a state civil matter, the NCAA. Seeking to block the participation of transgender athletes in women's sports, and alleging in the course of that complaint, now just being released today, that the policies of the NCAA that attempts to try to bring equity and diversity and inclusion into sports at the collegiate level, that it tricks and it misleads fans. The lawsuit apparently filed in the state district court, again, this is not a federal lawsuit, it's a state lawsuit, in Lubbock, Texas, announced yesterday, and again, we get more details today, says that the NCAA has violated, continues to violate, the Texas Deceptive Trade Practices Act, commercial statute there passed by the legislature. How does it do that? According to the complaint, again, filed in state court by the attorney general there, it promotes women's sports that may include a transgender athlete. The law is designed, of course, to protect consumers from being misled or tricked into buying products or services that are not as advertised. That, according to the lawsuit just being made public today. The Texas lawsuit, of course, the latest attempt to address this issue generally in America of transgender issues in the Supreme Court, plainly very much on the mind of our incoming president, who has vowed to reverse the Biden policies in the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, in other departments of this administration, reversing all of that, attempting to establish greater inclusivity for all people in America, including our transgender populations. The lawsuit, again, this latest attempt by these politicians and by soon-to-be government officials, existing government officials, to target transgender populations, including athletes, and to push the NCAA. That's the purpose behind this lawsuit in Texas now, to banning them from competition. Getting an order is what the Texas Attorney General wants, an order from the state court there that says you can't do this. President-elect Donald Trump said he wants to stop those athletes from competing. Indeed, today, yesterday, and today, the Attorney General of the state of Texas seeking an injunction to do just that, to prevent the NCAA from allowing transgender athletes to compete in women's sports in Texas, or, get this, in sports that involve Texas programs. Sounds very broad, does it not? It wants the court to require the NCAA to stop marketing events as women's sports if transgender athletes are allowed. In a statement that explains this lawsuit, Paxton appeared to reference the recent controversy involving San Jose State women's volleyball, where several opponents forfeited matches this season on grounds the Spartans had a transgender player. He invoked that as well. A federal court just last month, as we know, again, much in the news, refused to block the school from playing in the Montana West Conference Championship. And all of this, of course, from the Attorney General of the state of Texas, echoing what our incoming president has said, echoing also in connection with this odd and almost certainly to be unsuccessful invocation of state commercial law, state business law. That is the basis upon which this lawsuit is premised, the Texas Deceptive Trade Practices Act. What does it do? Obviously, it is an attempt to protect consumers. We've got one here in Wisconsin. Virtually every state has that kind of thing. Attorneys general responsible for enforcing those kinds of laws to ensure that in terms of consumer issues and promotion, trade practices, the things you do when you buy products and services, that attorneys general can, in fact, have the legislative support and the authority to go into the courts and get bad practices, bad sales practices, bad marketing practices, all kinds of things prohibited. Using that commercial statute now in the state of Texas to go after transgender athletes. And we've seen precedent in this. Why? Because Donald Trump himself, using the Iowa consumer law just last week to address a problem that he sees in media in America. Also talking there, going after not only the ownership, the Gannett Corporation, but also a Texas newspaper there, the Register, that published a poll prior to the voting itself on in November of this past election season. They published a poll that turned out to be inaccurate by about 3 or 4 points. And Donald Trump has come back and said that is in violation of state law, the Consumer Protection Act in the state. He has sued the author, the producer of that poll. He's sued the newspaper itself. He's pursued the owner of the newspaper for alleging practices that are inconsistent with consumers' interest, invoking in a very peculiar way that state statute there, in the same way that Paxton today is doing it there in Texas. Very likely that this is the next trend that we will see, that addressing, invoking consumer laws as a way of getting after these social issues, not through civil rights practices, not through the established federal and state laws that should guarantee equal access to sports and, yes, academics and all the other trappings of life. Not doing it that way, but going through this commercial avenue. We're probably going to see more of that in the coming administration, certainly coming out of Texas as well. That just breaking today here on the Maggie Dawn Show, here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
Sweet silver bells all seem to say, throw cares away. Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, meek and the bold. Ding dong, ding dong, that is the song with joyful ring. All caroling, one seems to hear words of good cheer from everywhere. Filling the air, oh, how they pound, raising their sound. Dawn, Hillendale, Shell.
Zone Radio, WFHR.
At some point, you'll need to take money out of your IRA and 401k. What should you know about these mandatory withdrawals? First, they're called required minimum distributions, or RMDs, and you must start taking them when you're 73, or if you were born in 1960 or later, 75. RMDs apply to your traditional IRA and 401k, but not your Roth IRA or Roth 401k. The amount you take out is based on your account balance and age, but if you don't take out the required amount each year, you could face a 25% penalty. You can withdraw more than your RMD each year, but keep in mind that your withdrawals are taxable. When you inherit an IRA or 401k, you still must take RMDs, but you typically must take out all the money within 10 years. After you've started taking RMDs, you must do so by the end of each year. So, if you haven't taken them for 2024, you may need to act quickly. Learn as much as you can about them. You'll want to make the right moves at the right time. This is Clay Kanoki, your Edward Jones Financial Advisor, at 715-421-0958. Member SIPC.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give
it. You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
The morning show on WFHR, it's comedy?
I think for me, one of the quick ones that I have is like telling time on an analog clock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it takes me a minute. That was funny.
Yeah.
That was at least groan worthy. At least groan worthy.
I needed a minute for it to sink in, James.
No, that was funny. That's good.
Every weekday morning from 8 to 10, only on 97.5 FM, WFHR.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
I'm never home. And it may seem like I don't really appreciate you when I'm gone.
My name is Jim Santel. I am your host for this, the last segment of our broadcast this afternoon. I want to thank once again not only my terrific producer, Cardi, in the broadcast station of Civic Media, but also Maggie Dawn herself will be coming back after the new year to continue to have these wonderful conversations about life and livelihood in our state, in our nation, and in our world. Maggie, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. A brief program note, and that is Maggie's also invited me back. Yes, that's right. On the first day of the new year, January 1, it's a Wednesday. Going to be back here once again, sitting in her chair, talking about major things we can anticipate in the new year. And another programming note that relates to the program that I do here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. That is a thing called Amicus, a Law Review. We come to you every weekend on Saturday morning. It's live. It's repeated on Sunday afternoon. A couple of hours, likewise, talking about issues related to government and law, the aspiration for justice in America. I'm going to be doing a live show this Saturday, repeated on Sunday, talking about many of the issues that we'll bring to conclusion in this past year, 2024, in the area of rule of law. And then the following Saturday, the 4th of January, talking about what we can anticipate in the coming year, not only with the Trump administration, but in rule of law issues generally. All of that coming up on Civic Media. In that connection, law enforcement, we are reminded, of course, of something terrible that happened in Germany just this past Friday. You know well because you've seen this in the news. On Friday, more than 200 people were wounded, 41 of them seriously, in an attack that shattered the peace of Germany's Christmas season, celebrated as hundreds of outdoor markets around the country. Officials there in Germany still trying to figure out this complicated profile of a man in custody who killed 5 people in that attack, driving his SUV into a crowded Christmas market on Friday of last week. It has stunned the country and has regrettably animated not only the interests of law enforcement, of all people, trying to figure out exactly what the motivation was. The suspect, identified under German law just as Taleb A, under the privacy laws of Germany, he's a 50-year-old Saudi doctor who'd been living in Germany for nearly 2 decades. They say they're still trying to determine motives The Solace Clinic in Bernburg, which is a town about a half an hour drive from Magdeburg, which is where this happened, said that the man was a psychiatrist in their closed ward, often treating offenders who suffer from drug addiction. And again, in the assault itself, horrific. In the midst of this Christmas holiday season, not only these injuries, but also the deaths of a nine-year-old boy, of four women aged 45 to 75, that, according to police, coming out of that horrific event. Authorities not yet able to establish a motive for that, but plainly will continue to do that as the Christmas season continues in Germany and in other places around our nation, which leads us to our last story, our last set of commentary observations. And that is, as I said at the start of our first hour, we have this wonderful confluence this coming Wednesday of the Christmas holiday, the observation by Christians in Germany and England and the United States of the birth of Jesus Christ, also with the important holiday of Hanukkah. It's the 8-day festival of lights that commemorates the ancient story of how the Maccabees restored the Jewish temple. And we leave the program today because of the importance of the confluence of this and the notion that people of all faiths can indeed not only live together in peace, but also can celebrate the wonderful things of humanity, regardless of who they are, regardless of their immutable characteristics, regardless of their faith beliefs, in harmony. Latkes are fried potato cakes, originating in Eastern Europe, a tradition that's also around the nation. The dreidel game, played with a four-sided spinning top. That's a German tradition, Jewish American families, again, many of them, flock to Chinese restaurants now as a part of their observation of the Christmas season, because that was all that was open often on Christmas Day. This year, of course, Hanukkah and Christmas celebrated together. And of course, Hanukkah is on the same day of the Jewish calendar, the Hebrew calendar, every single year. It's the 25th day of the month of Kislev. And it usually falls between late November and late December on the Gregorian calendar. This year, it starts once again at sundown on Christmas Day, and it runs through January 2nd. Celebrating both holidays is nothing new. There's an awful lot of commentary out there about how families of Jewish faith and Christian faith are going to be observing this together. All of that coming up. The TV show The OC, some of you remember it, helped popularize this notion when a character named Seth Cohen, who was played by Adam Brody, who's the actor, celebrated Chrismukkha, right? Chrismukkh, in an episode of 2003. An awful lot of accounts there. In Britain, just like the United States, Hanukkah playing an important role for Jewish and mixed families, Christian and Jewish alike. Almost a quarter of British Jews now light both Hanukkah candles and also have a Christmas tree, according to an awful lot of research and reporting coming out of Great Britain these days. Many of the commentators saying it's a common experience to have a little bit of both. Accounts coming out of our own nation, including accounts from the Felber family in New York, who talk about the importance of bringing both traditions together. Well, the mother there saying, "Previously, I thought Hanukkah couldn't hold a candle to Christmas," she said. "Now I see in the fullness of time, it's not a competition. It's both. It's making room in your heart for all good things." This coming Wednesday, the celebration of Hanukkah and Christmas, and of course, a time of light and livelihood and education and meaning for people of all faiths, including the five great faiths in our national and our international history. We regard all of them as people of our common community. And on behalf of Maggie, and behalf of Cardi and all of us here at Civic Media, we wish you a wonderful Hanukkah, a wonderful Christmas, and a terrific holiday season. Take care, everybody.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Maggie Dawn.
Happy holidays, everyone. I'm Maggie Dawn. I'm on a little bit of a break, but not to worry. Host of Amicus, Jim Santel, guest host next.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
2 hours ago, Kyle arrived at the bar.
Hey, what's everyone drinking?
30 minutes ago, Kyle got his friends another round of drinks.
Cheers!
5 minutes ago, Kyle decided to drive home drunk. A minute ago, a law enforcement officer pulled up behind Kyle.
Sir, have you been drinking tonight?
A chain of events that began 2 hours ago is about to change Kyle's whole world. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is Locally Grown Radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Portions of the West Coast are getting high wind and an atmospheric river. The Santa Cruz Wharf partially collapsed and fell into the ocean during a high surf warning. Two people were rescued and a third swam to safety. KION-TV's Astrid Castro heard from Mayor Fred Keeley.
That restroom could be seen resting on the beach near the mouth of the San Lorenzo River. Even with the damage so far, officials remain worried.
We're anticipating that what is coming towards us is more serious than what was there.
Others on the wharf just feet from where it collapsed tell me they're grateful to be safe.
18 miles south of that area near Watsonville, a man died after a large wave trapped him under debris on a beach, likely related to the storm. Some folks in the Midwest and Northeast look like they'll have a white Christmas. Meteorologist Craig Allen.
There is snow now falling across the Great Lakes, and it includes areas from Michigan over towards Toronto, West